Maiden, Mother, Crone. In this moment, I sit on the threshold of the crone. I am no longer a maiden. That proverbial ship sailed many years ago. I am not yet a crone, but I hear the song deep in my cells, pulling on the tides of my plasma. My hands are beginning to show the outward signs of my work. The hundreds of babies that have passed through them are leaving their mark. I am proud of these hands and the care they display. I walk on this path, serving my families, gathering knowledge and experience as I go. Tying and braiding these elements into my soul, I feel this bridge approaching, the bridge that will carry me from the threshold to the full embrace of the crone. I open myself to this journey and the new gifts it will bestow. Quoted by Aubrey Tompkins, Certified Nurse Midwife.
Okay. All right. So we got another interview on Journey to Midwifery podcast. It's been a little bit. I've taken a little hiatus, but I am super happy to have on Aubrey Tompkins, who is a certified nurse midwife in Colorado, but she is going to give us a better introduction. So hi, Aubrey.
Hi, Amber. How's it going?
We're here. I'm excited.
Yeah, right. I feel like that's the theme of 2020. We're here and we're functioning. Like that's. Yes.
We're all the way in November. We've made it so far.
I know. So far, so good. Oh my goodness. Let's see. Introduce myself. All right. Yeah. I am Aubrey Tompkins. As you said, I am a certified nurse midwife. I live and work in Colorado. I currently am the midwifery director at a freestanding birthing center in Thornton, Colorado, which is just north of Denver, on the Front Range kind of urban corridor. And I created that birth center from the ground up, from scratch, essentially.
Wow.
We opened in April of 2019, so we're not quite 2 years old yet, and we have had, I'm trying to remember, the last number I think was 170 babies so far.
Wow. What's that average out a month?
So, you know, we've had some months where there's been 19, mm-hmm. and then that's our highest. And then the lowest we had, I think, was 7.
Okay.
So it's kind of spaced out around that. We have all the, in Colorado, the rules are interesting, and that's a whole other side discussion, but only CNMs can work in birth centers in Colorado, which is unusual around the country. But so we are a CNM group, and we are the only birth center on the Front Range of Colorado where our midwives have admitting privileges and privileges at the hospital that we partner with. So
nice.
That was a huge deal to me in getting this birth center going and open. Prior to this birth center, I had worked at another birth center since 2006. Started there as a nurse and an educator, then became a midwife, and then was the clinical director there for the last 6 years that I was there. And in working with birth centers, transfers are real, transfers happen, transfers should happen. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't not happen, right? If you're practicing safely, transfers happen.
Exactly.
And my experience in transfers was that the vast majority of the time, nobody's excited about it, right? The family's not happy. Mm-hmm. It's not like a yay, we're transferring. But the vast majority of families understood the transfer, you know, agreed that the transfer was necessary and felt like it was the right decision. But so they were sad about it, but they realized and accepted and knew. But the trauma more so came from losing their provider and the provider team that they had built a relationship with all during their pregnancy, because we would have to transfer them to the hospital. And we had a good relationship with the hospital, but it was a complete transfer of care.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the hardest part for families in transfers. You know, it wasn't surprisingly just the transfer. It was losing their midwives. So when I was building this new one, it was really important to me. And it was one of the things that made me really excited about doing it, was having those privileges. So we don't do any planned hospital births from the beginning of care, but mm-hmm. we go to the hospital for our families who have been planning a birth center birth and either have to transfer, you know, switch to a hospital plan late in the third trimester for hypertension or things like that. And then for if they've been admitted to the birth center in labor and they have to transfer, which has been phenomenal and wonderful and really has decreased, I feel, the amount of trauma that families have around having to transfer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I am going to ask you how you got into midwifery, but in in leading up to, or asking more about your going, being able to go to the hospital, how many midwives do you have? How does that work? Like, you and I both know, if you have, let's say your mama transferred for prolonged labor, that can be like 3 to 4 days.
Yeah.
Is that one midwife staying with that family for the whole time? How do you guys work that?
Yeah. So we have 4 full-time midwives. And I am one of those. So I always joke, you know, my schedule is actually like 1.6 FTEs.
Yeah.
I think that happens a lot to people who are directors or, you know, the leads or whatever, but, we have 4 full-time, you know, clinical midwife FTEs, and the 4 of us share all of the clients. So I don't have my own little group, and one of the other midwives doesn't have hers. We all see everybody and we all share everybody. And we do 24-hour call shifts. So ours happen to start at 6 a.m. So they go from 6 a.m. to 6 a.m. And the families know that we do this. And that's how we kind of share the burden. So when someone's at the hospital, you know, if they're there for multiple days, which, as you have said, does happen, particularly when you're doing kind of midwifery led inductions that are patient and slow and take their time, and you don't have to rush things when you don't need to, which is a wonderful thing that we have at our hospital and the ability to do that. So yeah, we just, you know, every 24 hours, we kind of change shifts and give report and pass on and do all of that.
Okay. That's nice.
Yeah. And the families meet
fatigue.
All of us. Yeah. Yeah. And the families meet all of us during their care, too. So it's not, and they know this from the get go. And I always tell people when they're thinking about coming to the birth center, is that it doesn't really matter which one of the midwives you have at your birth, because it's not about the midwife. It's about you and your birth team and your education, and this is your process. And we, as the midwives, all follow the same policies and the same protocols. And birth center midwives are a definite type of midwife. And so we all practice very similarly. So in essence, we are somewhat interchangeable with each other. And again, it's not about us. It's about them and their team and their process.
Yeah, that is good. Sustainable midwifery.
Yes, it's so important. That's why I love birth center care so much, because I get to practice midwifery in the way that I like the best. And I get to share it too. It's not all me.
Yeah. Yeah, when you're running that show with 1 or 2, that is really hard.
Yeah, no, I don't want to ever do that.
Yeah. So you guys probably rotate vacations and try to just have 1 out at a time.
Yes.
Things like that.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's a very tight-knit group. Yeah.
Yeah, and you have to, as I told you before, I worked for birth center too once, and many people I've interviewed really, and you can tell me if this is true, it's not just a job, it's a way of life.
Yeah, it's a lifestyle for sure. Yeah. And you have to know that going in. And, you know, I have a midwife colleague recently who has realized that that doesn't work for her, that she doesn't like that it's a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. And that's the wonderful thing about midwifery, is she can find a different thing that she likes that works better for her and her family, and thrive in that way.
Yeah. And I was the same way as her.
Yeah.
I love midwifery, but that didn't work for me.
Correct. And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah. And I
there's
really
all different ways to be a midwife.
There is, but hearing, because as we said offline, so many midwives are saying, I want to do birth center, I want to do birth center. There's so many fabulous, wonderful, fabulous things about it, but you have to fully understand what that means when you go into it. And your spouses are part of it, your kids are part of it, everything. Yeah.
Yeah. My youngest daughter took her first steps at the first birth center that I worked at. When I was a nurse, at a staff meeting of nurses, because we would all bring our kids, because that's the way it is. And she took her very first steps there in the meeting. So yeah, it's definitely a lifestyle, which has benefits and problems too, right? Like everything else in life, there's always pros and there's always cons, and you just have to find the ones that fit your life the best.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That's right. And also, before we get into your story, since we're on this, can you discuss salary with me, which we talked about? What would somebody in Colorado, going into birth center work, might they expect to make?
Yeah. So when I first started as a midwife in a birth center in Colorado 11 years ago as a new grad, my starting salary was $69,000. Mm-hmm. And I was just so happy to have a job, first of all, as a new grad, and then to also have a job in quote unquote my dream place, which was the birth center I had worked at as a nurse for years before, that I pretty much was like, yeah, sure, I'm going to take it. Sign me up on the dotted line. And you know, the thing about birth centers, unfortunately / fortunately, is they're usually small businesses, right? So it's a very small business. The budget is very dependent on the business, right? And the how many people are having to be paid and all of that. So it's typically you're not going to make the same type of salary as you would make if you went to work for a big hospital system. So I always have to kind of be realistic with people about that, and that's just the deal. You also, $69,000 is really low. So I would expect, as a new grad midwife in Colorado applying to a birth center, that you should expect around $80,000.
And that's not bad.
No, I don't think it is. And the birth center that I work for is really committed to that. That's one of the things. So it's actually owned by a private physician group. And one of their things is to pay people reasonable salaries, and to really try and foster a work-life balance that's important. So that's really nice too. Now, that could be high. If you called another birth center in Colorado, they might kind of be like, that's not.
Yeah.
So there is some fluctuation around that for sure.
Yeah. But that's a livable wage. And especially with that quality of life, you're not delivering or catching, you know, into the hundreds like some hospital births are doing.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah.
And we have benefits, which is a big part
of it. Oh, yeah. That's right? Another question.
That doesn't include. So, because I'm a manager and on the admin side too, whatever your salary is, right? So say it's 80K, then you have to tack on and know that your employer is paying plus 25% roughly if you're getting benefits, right? If you're getting medical and dental and vision and a 401K and, you know, long-term, short-term disability, those kinds of things, plus our, we pay your annual dues to professional organizations. We pay for your licensure fees, your DEA, you know, your NRP, your BLS. And then we also have a pretty generous continuing education stipend every year. So you have to think about that too when you're looking at your salary, is that all those other benefits add up too. And our practice for sure has all of those.
Yeah. And malpractice.
And vacation. Yes. And we cover malpractice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep, and vacation, how much vacation you get.
Yeah, that's a big deal. We get 3 weeks a year and a week for CME.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I feel that it's very good.
You have a very good package, so people might start calling you.
I know, right?
And say, we're full, I'm sorry. But 19 is a busy month. That month, nobody slept,
I think. That month was busy, yeah.
Are you seasonally busy?
Yeah, that was in June. So we had a really big intake in response to COVID and the restrictions that hospitals were forced to put into place.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other side discussion. And I get both sides of the argument 100%. But so we had a pretty big bump at that time. And so that was kind of the first month after that initial, like, big wave of transfers over. Mm-hmm. Our average is probably around 13 to 14.
Okay. That's reasonable for 4 midwives.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's busy. And I've heard that from a lot of birth centers and home births, that they just had a huge influx and they had to turn people away, you know, sadly, because you just can't safely do that.
Yeah, you can't do, you can only do so much. It's a much more limited facility, right? There's only so many rooms. There's only so many, so much staff and all of that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you all just center? Do you do home birth at all?
We just do home. We just do birth center. And then, as I said, the hospital births that have to. But we're, as I said, we don't do planned hospital births from the beginning. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And as a, you know, many home births and or centers will do home and center patient choice. So that's why I asked that.
Yeah.
Or family.
And that's
choice.
A, that's a whole different staffing model that you have to figure out.
Yeah. I've been there. So yeah.
Yeah.
So let's tell me why you went into midwifery. What brought you here?
Yeah, I feel, you know, like many, many midwives, my story is similar in that I, when I became pregnant with my first child, so I had always been very interested in healing arts. When I was really, when I was a small child, I wanted to be a physician. And then I kind of became more interested in quote unquote alternative or complementary things. I became very interested and did a lot of education around herbs and herbalism. I was looking into becoming a Chinese medicine practitioner, looking into massage therapy, all that kind of stuff, but nothing 100% like grabbed me. And then I got pregnant with my first child, and I was the first person in my social group of friends to get pregnant. And the thing that really startled me when I became pregnant with my first was that there was two things that I knew, and I didn't know where these two things came from. I didn't have any conscious realization of knowing about these things ahead of time, but I knew that I wanted a midwife, and I didn't really even know what that meant or what midwifery looked like in this country or anything to do with that. And then I knew that I wanted to breastfeed. And again, I don't ever have any conscious remembering of seeing people breastfeed or knowing that much about breastfeeding, but those two things were just in my core. These things will happen. And it was really shocking to me, actually. And then, I didn't, as I said, I didn't know anything about midwifery in this country or the world. And so I just started doing research, and I found a midwifery group that I was on Medicaid for my first pregnancy. And I found a midwifery group in my community that accepted Medicaid. They worked out of a local hospital here in Denver. And I started going to them for prenatal care. And, you know, I had a very typical hospital-based experience. You know, I had kind of shorter appointments, and, you know, there was nothing bad. There was nothing bad. There was nothing wrong. It just wasn't as empowering as I thought it could be. And then I, you know, when I had my son, he turned out to be a son, in the hospital, again, I didn't have a traumatic experience. It wasn't awful. My midwives were lovely. I do believe that I had a vaginal birth because I had midwives. I had a very prolonged, second stage, of a asynclitic direct OP, 8-pound, 12-ounce baby. and I think I had a vaginal birth because A, I was stubborn, and B, my midwives, supported me and helped facilitate it and make it happen. I did have to have a vacuum extraction at the very end, after hours of second stage. But it was a vaginal birth, and I really attribute that to the midwifery care that I had. And then after that, then I kind of started to research and learn about all the different types of midwifery that are available in this country, and the smorgasbord of trainings and different ways to do it and all of that. And I really felt drawn to, you know, what we now call community birth. So out of hospital birth, so birth centers or home birth. And so I was definitely looking more towards the CPM route. But I was also a young mom. Not that long after my son's birth, I became a single mom. And So I wanted to do something. I was so anxious to do anything. And I decided, well, you know, the kind of the nursing school prerequisites are going to be good for me to get no matter what, right? Like anatomy and physiology seems like a really good class to take no matter what kind of midwife I want to be. Microbiology seems kind of important. So I worked on all of those nursing prerequisites at the local community college kind of part-time while I was being a single mom and working. And I was also looking for a CPM to do an apprenticeship with and kind of getting involved in the local midwifery community here in Denver. And things just kind of, I always love how in hindsight it always works out the way it's supposed to, but it might not feel like that in the moment. Mm-hmm. I was done with my nursing school prereqs. I hadn't quite secured an apprenticeship yet. And I thought, well, I'm just going to fill out an application to nursing school. And at that time in the early 2000s in the Denver metro area, nursing school was extremely competitive there. I mean, the program that I applied to had something like a couple thousand applicants for like 75 spots or something ridiculous. Oh, wow. Like that. Like it was ridiculous. And people, like, it was a known thing. Like, you have to apply multiple times, like, all of this stuff. And so I was like, oh, well, I'm just going to fill it out just kind of to get the experience of filling out, you know, the application and the process. And then I sent it off and I forgot about it. And then I actually was hooked up with a practicing CPM, and we were kind of interviewing each other for an apprenticeship. And honestly, in the same week, I realized that that CPM was not a good fit for me personally or my lifestyle as a single mother. And I got a letter from the nursing school that I got in.
Wow.
And it was shocking to me that I got in because of how competitive it was. And so I kind of took it as a sign, you know, from the universe, like, okay, this, I guess this is the way I'm supposed to go. And it ended up being 100% the right path, for me and my family and my lifestyle. You know, being a CPM or direct entry midwife or licensed midwife, you know, whichever apprentice, is a really hard lifestyle if you're a single mom. I mean, it's a hard lifestyle no matter what, but I couldn't figure out how to make it happen as a single mother with a small child, as far as I still had to have some kind of income, arranging childcare, being on call 24/7. How does that work as a single mother? What kind of jobs can you have to bring in income when you have to be able to leave 24/7?
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out how to make it work. So nursing school and CNM school worked better for me because it's a much more prescribed path, right? Like, it's more scheduled, and I could get financial aid in a different way and all of that stuff. So it worked out the best. And then now, on the other side of it, I'm really glad that I have the CNM training because I love birth. Don't get me wrong. I think all midwives become midwives because we're a little bit birth junkies. Mm-hmm. but I also really found a deep passion for healthcare, right? Annual exams, menopause, contraception is one of my big things that I love to do and talk about. So I really appreciate now that I have the scope and the training to do all the full range of healthcare that is available.
Yeah.
And someday in a few years when I really don't want to be on call all night, I have lots and lots of options.
Yes, you do. Did you get your midwifery degree also in Denver?
No. So I got my BSN, and it was an accelerated program at University of Colorado Health Sciences Center. And then I have my master's midwifery, my CNM from Frontier Nursing University. When I went to Frontier, though, it was called Frontier School of Midwifery and Family Nursing. Mm-hmm. It was a much bigger mouthful to say.
Yeah. When did you start there?
2006, 2007.
Okay. I wonder when they changed their name.
It was kind of, they were talking about it towards the end of my time there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like
a
thing that was coming down the works. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was at the same format as it is now, you visit twice and online.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. It was like okay. that. But when I first started, we had paper tests. So you had to have a proctor in your local area, who was, you know, vetted and whatever, and had to go through a process to be a proctor through the school. And so the school would send your tests and your exams to the proctor, and you would take it on paper, and the proctor had to verify that you took it in a room with no books, you know, to so people weren't cheating. And then you put it in a FedEx envelope, and you signed the outside on the seal, and the proctor signed the outside on the seal, and you sent it in, and then you had to wait for it to get graded and posted. And and now on Frontier, it's all online, and you have to have a special camera program to make sure that you're not cheating and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And immediate feedback.
Yes. Yeah. That's the, yeah, that used to make me crazy. Like, you sent off this test and then you're like, okay.
That would be hard. Yeah, and were you doing that weekly? Because they, I think they take tests weekly.
You know, so this is bad. I can't remember how often it was, but I don't think that it was weekly. So I think maybe they changed the format. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We had less tests, but they were bigger or something like that.
Weekly would be hard in that type of setting.
Yeah. I feel like it was monthly. Impossible. Yeah.
Yeah. Because they'd have to grade it. Oh my gosh, that'd be overwhelming.
Yeah, that would be too much. Yeah. Yeah, I'm class 54.
Oh, yeah.
For Frontier.
I don't
even
know what they're up now.
I think they're in the 200, right around 200. I'm not sure.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Go Frontier. They're awesome.
Yes.
Anyway, so you finished, got your license, and you went to work at the birth center where you were also a nurse.
Yep. Yep, okay. That first birth center, it opened in 2006, and that's when I started working there. It was called Mountain Midwifery Center, and I worked there as a nurse first, and I worked there as a nurse while I was going to midwifery school, and I also had a nursing job in the hospital.
Oh my gosh, were you still a single mom at that point?
At some time on that path, I met husband. Okay. But the birth center nursing job was very part-time. It was like on-call part-time, you know, around my regular schedule. And I did the weekend plan. So I worked every Friday and Saturday, but I made the same amount of money as if I was doing 312s a week because of the nighttime weekend differentials, you know.
What type of nursing were you doing?
Yeah, so I started out on postpartum and nursery, and then I moved to L&D, and we would also float to the NICU. And it was at the University of Colorado, big, you know, tertiary care center hospital with the full NICU, and there was a high risk and a low risk labor and delivery, and there was a high risk inpatient and a partum, and we all did all of it.
Yeah. So lots of helpful work experience.
Oh, it was amazing. I wouldn't trade that for anything. Was wonderful.
Yeah. And I would think helpful in your skills of transfer.
Yes.
Being just on alert when to do that.
Yes, absolutely. And also in the university hospital that I worked at, there was a very good collegial relationship between nurses and physicians and midwives. And so that's the culture I came up in, was not being intimidated by physicians, but respecting them as colleagues and expecting the same back. and all of that stuff. So it was an invaluable place to work and gain experience.
Did they have midwives in the hospital as well? Okay.
Yep. There were two midwifery practices. There still are two midwifery practices in the University of Colorado system. There's a group called the Center for Midwifery, and they're very much practice more like they do water births in the hospital, and it's a smaller practice. It's kind of more like a boutique practice, I guess. And then there's the University Nurse Midwife Practice that is the big, huge group that has a lot of midwives and sees everybody, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I bet it's a very, very, very busy hospital.
It is very busy.
Yeah. So what made you leave the birth center and start your own thing? Well, how did that happen?
Yeah, so I had been at the birth center, Mount Midwifery Center, for 12 years total, and or 11, anyway, a long time.
Yeah.
when you count starting as a nurse, and the whole time that I was there, and I was kind of ready for something different. There was some stuff happening at that birth center with the owner, and I just was like, this isn't going to be good. And you know, like I've kind of reached the end of the line here, and I had started to kind of put out into the universe like something else. Like I'm ready for something else. I want to change. I want to do something different. And then I was a few months after I kind of put that out there, I was contacted by this private physician group to see if I would be interested to coming over and working for them, and building them a birth center. And it kind of was like, you know, manna from heaven. Like, what is this amazing opportunity that's falling in my lap?
Mm-hmm.
So I had several interviews with them. It was kind of a process. I had also, the 2 years before that, I had been one of the founders of a group called the Colorado Birth Center Coalition. And I founded that group because the regulations around birth centers in the state of Colorado were written in the early 80s, and they had not been updated since. So you can imagine the difference in management and care in maternity, you know, between 1983 and, you know, the mid 2000, you know, the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
And so we formed a coalition to petition the health department to open up the regulations to have them be rewritten. And initially the Colorado Department of Health and the state of Colorado declined to do so. So we, as a coalition, pooled our resources and time and money, and we hired an attorney who specializes in birth justice. And that attorney, their name is Indra, they, you know, put together an amazing, I don't know the legal terms, but like, this is the situation, here's the history, we need to have these regulations open and rewritten, or we will pursue a lawsuit to make you open them. And that's when finally the health department was like, oh, don't do that. Don't do that. We'll open the rules. We'll open the regulations. So then that was 18 months, 19 months, just over a year and a half of us as the coalition with the attorney working with the community stakeholders and the health department to rewrite the regulations. So I think that's one of the reasons why the private physician group reached out to me, because I am the expert in the regs in Colorado for birth centers.
Yeah.
I was intimately involved in writing them.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I was on their radar, and popped up for them. And also a midwife mentor of mine, she knew them, and she had also told them about me. So it was kind of, you know, they heard about me from a couple different places.
Yeah.
And so then I came over to work with them. It took 2 years behind the scenes. And during those 2 years, I was a hospital-based midwife, in their practice. They had a pre-existing midwifery practice within their group. And I just kind of worked part-time as a hospital-based midwife, which was very interesting for me. To go from being a community-based only to a hospital-based only. And there's things I love about both places, and there's things that are frustrating about both places.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really an amazing time, those 2 years. And also at the same time, I was, you know, writing a policy and procedure manual and talking to the architects and the designers and all of that stuff. And then we opened in April of 2019.
So you got to design this birth center.
Yeah. Yep.
What a dream.
It's my baby.
Yeah.
I mean, from the color of the paint in the place to the tiles to the where things go and how to design the flow and all of that. Yeah. I mean, I didn't do it by myself. I'm not the only one, but, you know, we had an architect and designer, and I brought people in as the process went along. So,
yeah, but to have done it for 12 years and then to say, this is what works, this is what didn't, put it in this way.
Yes.
That was amazing.
Yeah. It was great.
That is your baby.
It was my baby. It's called Seasons Midwifery and Birth Center. Okay. And like I said, we're in Thornton, Colorado.
Yeah. And you, do you transfer to that big old hospital you were talking about? Or
no, we transfer to a pretty small community-based hospital. It's called North Suburban Medical Center, and it's part of Health One. And it's a relatively small hospital. I mean, particularly, you know, I was used to the University of Colorado system, which is big. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is so big. And it's a wonderful system. Don't get me wrong. I loved being an employee there. I'm proud to say that I worked there, and I'm proud that that's where I got my bachelor's for nursing was through there. But it is very interesting to then come to this little sweet, tiny community hospital where there's like the one building and you can like walk in and talk to the CMO, like right there, you know,
yeah.
And the CNO and all of that stuff, which is, I really like it a lot. It's great.
But now as a smaller hospital, you can correct me, but I feel like they would be open to continuing that out of hospital.
Yeah, it's been
mentality,
phenomenal.
Kind of.
Yeah, it was really, it turned out to be really great that I worked there for 2 years before the birth center opened, because I was able to really build a relationship with the staff, the administrators, the nurses. You know, when I first started there and I wanted to do, you know, intermittent auscultation, they had a great intermittent auscultation policy. I was actually really happy when I had to dig it up from the archives and blow the dust off of it.
You're like, here it is.
Yeah, but it was a really great one. Like, I didn't need to change it or anything. It was great. It just hadn't been utilized. And so, being able to work with the nursing staff and increase their comfort, and the nurse manager had me do some in-services, you know, and it's been phenomenal. And I would, to give them all credit, they hadn't done it, but they were really open to it and really adopted it beautifully.
Oh, were you the only midwife at that time?
There were two other midwives in that group, but they practiced very differently than I did.
I would imagine, with all your experience.
Yeah. So yeah. They, when I came, they, the nurses were like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that person, she just had a baby standing up at the side of the bed.
Yeah. Oh, that's so neat of you to bring that. I mean, just like hearing your story, it's like everything. I'm, like you said, it doesn't feel like it at the time, I'm sure, but it just feels like all the pieces just fell.
Yeah.
Over and over into the right place.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I really believe hindsight is 20/20, you know, and it all works out the way it's supposed to in the end, even though you might not enjoy it or believe it or like it in the middle, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a, I remember I told you I Googled that article.
Yes.
I'm going to quote you because I think it goes well with your story. It's just perfect. I read this. I highlighted it. I'm like, this is so perfect and so 2020, hindsight 2020. And just, you know, people who are listening that are going into this and they're feeling like, oh, you know, I want to do this, but so hard, this and that, whatever hurdle. This little quote you said was perfect. Keep this in mind when you're working towards your goals. Setbacks and challenges are lessons to be learned. Falling down is normal and to be expected. Take the time to assess the damage, analyze the why, heal the wounds, and then pick yourself back up. You will be stronger. The community needs you, your experience, and your vision. I was like, that is so perfect.
That's a good quote.
Yeah, you said that.
I said that. Cool.
Yeah, it just really popped out at me and I thought, oh. I have to say that was so perfect. So,
yeah, I mean, definitely as I've practiced more, I'm becoming, and I think this is normal too. When you first start out as a midwife, you have to really focus on getting your legs underneath you, right? Like learning your, refining your style and how you want to practice, learning where you are practicing and the policies and the culture and all of that stuff. And I think for the first few years, that's all that you do. And I think that's appropriate and fine. And then as your career is longer, then you can kind of start to pick your head up and look around and go, okay, where do I want, what do I want to do next? And for some people, that might be just, not just, because just makes it sound like it's a lesser choice, but that for some people that may be, you know, continuing doing that and doing the work that is so valuable and important at the bedside, and sticking with that. And that is wonderful and beautiful. And then other people pick their heads up and go, okay, I want to start doing things more kind of locally in my community or nationally or politically. You know, I know, midwives who have run for political positions and, you know, in their state Congress, like that we all kind of figure out where we want to go after that. And for me, super dedicated to birth centers. You know, I always say that birth centers are my jam. And so 2 years ago, I started being a faculty member with the American Association of Birth Centers to teach the How to Start a Birth Center workshop.
Nice.
And I love that because I love before our friend COVID, we traveled around the country and did in-person workshops, which I loved. And now it's all moved virtual, which is fine too. But I do look forward to seeing people face-to-face in person again. But because I love birth centers and the type of care that they provide, and I really want to increase access to that. And then on those same lines, I was just recently elected to be the president of AABC.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, which is a big deal. I'm equally excited and terrified.
Yeah.
because, again, that's where I have decided I want to really, you know, put my time and energy is into the world of birth centers. So I just started my tenure in October, so I'm still kind of learning and in my mentorship phase of that. Being mentored by the current president. And that is something that I'm really excited about.
That is so awesome. I feel like I'm talking to a famous person and I'm excited about that.
That's so funny. I don't feel like a famous person. Whenever people recognize my name, I'm always, really? What? Oh, okay.
Yeah. That, I guess that ever looming imposter syndrome stays with you forever and ever.
Isn't it real?
Yeah.
I just want to know if people have studied it as if it's different between men and women. Like, do men have as significant of an imposter syndrome as women do? I don't know. But I feel like it's definitely a thing for women in our culture.
I feel like I read an article when I was in graduate school and it was specifically talking about women and having that and kind of being either like the peacemaker or being the like authoritative to try to overcome that. Not that everybody is, just in this specific article was talking about that. So I don't know about men, but I know in that article it did talk a lot that it was very common in women.
Yeah, that there's a gender relation somehow in there, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting and it's ugly, I think, a lot.
It is. And it's also the classic thing too, and I think we all are guilty of this. The whole like, you can attack me and I'll take it, but if you attack my friend, then the lion's gonna come out. And I think it doesn't have to be as dramatic as being attacked, but I think we all need to learn how to bring the lion out for ourselves, right?
Yes.
And that's something that I'm always trying to work on as well.
Yeah. Or even just caretaking, how you would advise your patients. You should do that for yourself.
Which, we should do that for
I'm
ourselves.
Terrible at it. So.
Yeah.
Maybe self-care, it gets better as we get older. I don't know. Yeah. But and you have another project, your book.
Yes. Yeah. What's so I have three children, like living, breathing children. And then I have.
What are their ages now?
They are 23, 22, and 14.
Okay.
And then I have this birth center that I built. So I always joke that that's my fourth baby.
Oh, yeah.
and then my fifth baby is this book that I recently birthed, which was a huge accomplishment for me. I have always wanted to write a book since I was a child. I am an avid reader and always have like two or three books going. Can't ever get enough. And have always wanted to write a book myself. And I had an opportunity with a publisher to write this book. It's been amazing. It came out in June. It is called Midwifery for Expectant Parents. And you can get it on Amazon and Barnes and Noble and Target and all the different places you can buy books online. And it really is, I've said this before, but I really feel passionately about it. It is a love letter for midwives. It is all about midwives and the midwifery model of care and all the different types of midwives, all the different places that midwives work. And it's not written like if as a midwife, if you read it, it's not, it's geared towards consumers.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say it's a love letter to midwives, it's because I really want to educate consumers on who we are and what we do, and the broad scope of our practice. And if you want an epidural in the hospital, there's a midwife for you. If you want, you know, to have a baby by the river in your backyard, there's a midwife for you.
Yes.
And everything in between, as far as options. And so the book is really about that in a non-judgmental, unbiased way. And all the different things that midwifery does, that it's not just labor and birth, and that there's all the postpartum care and the full scope. And it's really a passion project of mine to get people to know about the book and share the book and get it out there in the world. Because we in the midwifery community, there's this longstanding thing, and I'm sure you feel the same way, Amber, where you're constantly like, what's a midwife?
Mm-hmm.
You're a midwife? There are midwives? What is that? I thought that was an old-timey thing. And so we're constantly having to educate the public on who we are and what we do. And so this book is really my answer to that, who we are and what we do in a really great, easily accessible format for families.
That's awesome. That needed to be written.
Yes, I feel, I hope, you know, I hope that it takes off and people learn about it and spread it and share it far and wide.
Yeah. And I assume it's a United States based midwifery information.
Yes, okay. It is correct. I can't, I really just, you know, midwifery is such a broad topic around the globe, right?
Yes.
And so I really had to focus in, and so it is for American audiences.
But still needed to be written, because even internationally they're, I feel like sometimes they're more similar. This is very general statement, but they have a more similar midwifery platform than the mixture in United States. You know, like they go right on through and they're midwives, whereas we have this education.
It's more streamlined, it seems like, in many other countries. And in the U.S., it's very much a smorgasbord.
Right.
And there's no, and I think it's part of the reason why people don't know who we are and what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so, there's so many different options and paths, and it is confusing. And even people in the culture get confused. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Even us midwives.
Yeah. So. I mean, I've interviewed so many CNMs that were like, I didn't even know CPM existed, which is why I went CNM, and, you know, whatever they feel about it now, but they didn't know at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and
there's also, unfortunately, a level of, in many circles, kind of animosity between the different types of midwives in this country. The the horizontal violence can be very real. And it really is upsetting to me. And it's been one of my things as long as I've been a midwife, is to decrease that horizontal violence. You know, I have, the thing that I say is that it's a lot easier for the medical establishment to keep us down if we do half their work for them. And if we fight and bicker amongst ourselves and denigrate each other, then we're doing half the work for the quote unquote medical, you know, patriarchal system that we have in this country. And that is not to denigrate any one individual physician. And I love my physician colleagues and have excellent relationships with them, but there is a problem with the system as a whole. And, you know, that's real. We spend the most money of any developed country and have the worst outcomes. So that's a fact.
I think most people could agree with that.
And every, you know, every major reputable organization that looks at it says, hey, one of the big answers is midwifery. And we really could make a huge difference if, and one of the problems is we fight with each other, and that makes me sad.
Yeah. And there's still so many pockets where it's not accepted, or people don't know what the heck it is.
Yeah. I mean, I get that. I used to get it a lot more, but so I was I'm a CNM, but I didn't work in a hospital. Right. So I would go to like ACNM events and people wouldn't know kind of exactly how to interact with me, right? Because ACNM and CNMs are still very highly hospital-based, which is fine. Again, it's not a problem. But those of us who are CNMs who work in the community setting are kind of put in this other little category, right? So we're not the same as the other CNMs. But then if you go to a community-based group, they look at you sideways because you're a CNM. Mm-hmm. So it's like you don't really have a home.
Yeah.
In either place. That's one of the reasons why I was really drawn to the AABC, the American Association of Birth Centers, because it's a pretty equal mix between CNMs and CPMs, and MDs are involved as well. And it just was a much more welcoming community for someone in my position. Yeah.
And I think, and please don't quote me, anybody listening, I think it's like 80-85% of CNMs work in the hospital.
Yes. Yeah. Something it's like high. That. Yes. It's a high number. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
So it makes sense that you would feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think you are creating this really awesome niche in what you're doing, and you're, you know, in a leadership position, still practicing, taking so much vast experience with you, creating this birth center, and then probably, I assume, also mentoring the people that work with you and your team.
Yes.
So you just are just sprinkling your knowledge everywhere. That's
when
the
you
only
said
thing
that
I could think
just
of.
Now, I had like a little vision of like a little fairy with little wings, a little wand
That's
with
you.
A star on the end sprinkling.
Exactly.
I love it. So that's awesome.
Yes. You're the midwife fairy.
I want to be
Colorado.
A fairy. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. I also, I mean, if anybody wants to check me out, I'm on social media as a midwife on the path.
Okay. Both Instagram, Facebook?
Instagram and Facebook. I have not gotten on the TikTok wagon. I feel like I'm too old.
Yeah. I hear you.
But I'm not there. But yes, if you look up A Midwife on the Path on Instagram and Facebook, and there's a website too. But
the same?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I'll put it in the show notes too if anybody wants to click on it.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you, Aubrey.
And please get my book. It's amazing.
Yes.
It's a great book to have in a library, like a resource library. Do you know what I mean? Like community-based stuff.
I was thinking
for
that.
Folks
having
when they're
it, like, in my exam room.
Yes.
That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah, it's really good resource.
I like that. I'm going to check it out.
And it's all evidence-based with references and all of that because, you know, I wrote it, so it has to be said.
Mm-hmm. And we love that.
Yes.
We CNMs love that.
Exactly. We do.
Nice. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
It was. It was a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thanks again for listening to another episode of Journey to Midwifery podcast. I hope you will go and check out Aubrey's super fun blog and website at amidwifeonthepath.com. That website, as well as the website to her birth center and her social media pages, are linked in the show notes. I specifically shared the quote at the beginning of the episode from her blog, and that the story of the mother, the maiden, and the crone has always resonated with me, and I feel represents so deeply the journey of a midwife. If you feel called to share your journey, please reach out to me at journeytomidwiferypodcast@gmail.com. You might have noticed I am not on social media anymore, as I too am exploring other parts of my journey, and I'm practicing being more present in my day-to-day life. But I will always happily share your story if you reach out. Stay peaceful, friends.